Well, it is a joy to welcome you to the KLC Preaching Podcast. My name is Jared Alcantara, and I teach preaching here at Baylor University's Truett Theological Seminary. And I also get the honor of directing the Kyle Lake Center for Effective Preaching. We're so grateful that you've joined us. We want, as a podcast, to serve pastors at every phase in a way that not only enhances their preaching, but enhances them as leaders and as followers of Jesus Christ. I want to say also, it is my honor and my privilege to welcome Dr. Todd Bolsinger to the podcast. It's just such a joy to have you. Welcome. Thanks for being here with us.
Thank you, Jared. This is good fun.
Oh, well, thank you for coming. Now, one of the things that we're going to talk about is your book, Invest in Transformation. But before we get there, what we normally like to do is just get to know those who join us on the podcast. So talk to us a little bit about who you are. Tell us what you're doing now, but also take us back in time. Talk to us about your experience of conversion and your call to vocational ministry, and you pastored for many years, and now you're doing something new that you've been doing for a while. So just talk to us about who you are and a little bit more about where you're from.
Yeah, thanks. So I was raised Roman Catholic. My grandfather's name is literally Guido Evangelisti, Guy the Evangelist. I like to joke that I think I'm related to St. Francis somewhere back in there. But when I was in high school, my parents went through a divorce. I ended up in this youth organization called Youth for Christ. It was at a campus life club where someone introduced me to the idea that Jesus could be someone who cared about my life, that I could walk alongside him, that I could have a personal relationship. And I actually became a youth evangelist. I ended up being in Youth for Christ, working with them, doing youth evangelism. And I preached my first sermon when I was 18. What I realized very, very quickly is that I was being nurtured to preach and teach the Bible. And I ended up at 23 at Hollywood Presbyterian. I was a year out of college, and I was their college director. And I found myself working for one of the 12 greatest preachers in the English-speaking world, according to Baylor University, Lloyd-John Ogilvie, and was just cultivated to basically become a preacher and pastor, and became a Presbyterian pastor. And for 27 years, that's what I did, and loved every bit of it. And I'm still ordained as a Presbyterian, loved the context I was in. The church I was in, I ended up going and spending 17 years in a little beach community. I literally just wanted to be a parish pastor. Like, this community I loved, I want to raise my children, I want to just be have a faithful pastorate. And God gave me the desire of my heart. I was there 17 years. And in the middle of it, I ended up in a little bit of a crisis, and the crisis was odd. It was all the metrics were going up and the morale was going down. And I didn't know what to do. Why were my best leaders in my church checking out of ministry, pulling back, getting cynical and discouraged? And what I realized was one of the challenges that I talk about in a lot more depth was the way I led people primarily to me. I was a pretty good preacher, and people liked my preaching, and people even said things like, "We come here because we like your preaching." And I realized that without even trying, I was kind of creating what I sometimes sarcastically call Todd Bolsinger Ministries at San Clemente Presbyterian Church. And what I realized is the healthiest people said, "Thank you very much, but we would actually like to invest our lives in something bigger than you." So I had to learn to lead all over again. And it led me into this whole field of what's called adaptive leadership. And it's been almost a 20-year journey that I've been working in this notion of adaptive leadership. And that eventually led me to leave the church. After 27 years of being a pastor, I became a seminary administrator working at Fuller Seminary, where I'd gotten my MDiv and my PhD. And along the way, just kept coaching and consulting. And now I run a center that researches leadership, and I have a leadership consulting company that works on organizational change, works on leading change.
Wow. Well, we'll have to swap stories, because my plan also was to be a pastor until I couldn't be anymore.
Yeah.
So the saying is, don't tell God about your plans.
Exactly. God laughs.
That's the surest way. Yeah. God laughs. Well, so you've had a chance to preach and teach and lead, and now you're also coaching other leaders too.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how your preaching has changed.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you already gesture to that too, that you were leading people to yourself instead of to participate in something bigger than themselves.
Yeah.
So talk to us about how you reframed your understanding of preaching, how you related it to leadership. So how has your preaching changed over all of these years as you've entered these new phases of life and ministry?
Yeah. One of the most interesting things about my life today is I now preach 4 to 8 times a year, where I used to preach 50 to 100 times a year, right? And in all those years that I was preaching, you know, 50 times a year, I never preached the same sermon twice. I love the study. I love the learning. I remember I was 15 years into my pastorate and somebody said, we should do a sermon on the Lord's Prayer. And I said, oh, I did that 12 years ago. Like for me, it was the study was so huge.
Yeah.
Today, however, I have like 4 sermons and they're really pretty good because I do them over and over and over again.
Sure,
because
sure.
Now preaching is serving something else.
Uh-huh.
I used to preach for a congregation and partly I was a younger pastor and I needed to go my own development. And what I was trying to figure out was when I said I was drawing people to myself, it wasn't that I was so self-focused. It was I didn't know any other way to lead people except to get them to trust me, believe in me, believe the things I'm saying, let's go together. Like I felt like my whole movement of preaching was, come, follow me as I follow Christ, right? It's very biblical.
Right.
But now what I realize is a lot of my work is to say to people, my job is to help you lead a group of people into probably something you don't even know yet. Mm. Like the Spirit is taking us into uncharted territory. We're not going to be experts in the same way. So you have to be able to take people on a journey of transformation that you're going to be transformed alongside them.
Mm. Yeah. Now, you use the language of transformation, and I love the title, Invest in Transformation, Quit Relying on Trust. And like all these questions come to my mind, especially because sometimes in theological conversations, we'll say, well, no, transformation is something God does. Or like when we're having leadership conversations, we'll say, like with Lencioni, we'll say, no, no, trust is fundamental to a team. You can't do anything else without trust. So talk to us about how your understanding of transformation changed and then why you think we need to quit relying on trust. What you mean by that?
Yeah. So first of all, there is no transformation without trust. Bottom line. If no one's going to trust you to go to some place that's difficult and painful, no one's going to trust you to give up their nets, lay down their life, follow me, go talk to the person at the well who nobody else is willing to talk to. No one's going to trust you to do those things that Jesus calls us to do. They're not going to take those on if they don't trust who you are. So for me, being a steward of the Scriptures, a trustworthy steward of the Scriptures, that I will do all I can to be as faithful to this word as I can is really fundamental. But trust is not transformation. If you just sit here and trust me and listen to me, you can just sit here and not take the step that is needed for transformation. And too much of our leadership is, as long as I'm trustworthy, which means, you know, I'm going to do the things that are competent and I'm going to be a person of good character and I'm not going to squander that or use that or lose that.
I'll show up.
Yep, I'll show up. Uh-huh. Literally, it's important. We have a lot of scandals these days about pastors who lost trust because they didn't have character or they were bullies or they didn't have competence or there's lots of ways to lose trust. That's absolutely a given. But the goal isn't to have a long tenure where everybody just trusts you.
Sounds like that's where we start.
Yeah, it's a starting point.
But we can't rely on it to the sense that we believe that transformation will happen. Yep. That's all we have. Yep.
You actually have to invest that trust in transformation.
Okay.
So if I say to you, Jared, I'm walking into a much more pluralistic community and I've been shaped in an environment that's been more homogeneous and I need your help. I need to trust that you both care about me, that you're going to actually help me do better because you actually care about me, and that you have the capacity to show me something. Like I need to trust your competence and your congruence as a person. Mm. When I do, then when you ask me to do something that might feel awkward or risky or vulnerable or that makes me feel vulnerable, like I remember sitting with a group of students and acknowledging that 17 years of working in a predominantly white environment meant that I spoke in language that made some of them not trust that I understood their world.
Mm, mm.
When they confronted me, like, hey, you're, I remember at the time looking up cultural competence. like, I remember Googling what is cultural competence, right? And I actually went to a person who was a pastor I knew, and I said, I'd like you to be my cultural competence coach. And he looked at me and goes, why? And I said, because I'm like a 50-year-old guy with a PhD who's been leading for years in predominantly homogeneous environments, and students are telling me that I'm not culturally competent. And he looked at me and goes, you're never going to be culturally competent. You're a 50-year-old guy with a PhD who's mostly been leading in. He said, but we could work on cultural humility. I hired him as my coach. Like, I realized, oh, he could tell me the truth. You have a deficit because of your privilege and your background and the trust people gave you. Now, you're going to only take them through transformation as you're willing to be vulnerable and go through transformation.
Right.
So now I'm no longer leading as the expert, let me tell you how to get there, but as the co-learner. Here's how we're going to approach going there. And for me, preaching is now more about my take going with people on a journey than it is my being the expert telling people what they should do. I always say almost every preacher gets inspired by the big idea. I learned this thing in the scriptures. I have this idea. I feel like God spoke to me. The Spirit is at work. You have this big idea. The question I want to know is, how does this idea speak to somebody's real pain? Do you know your neighbor's real problems? Or are we just speaking at them about our ideas? Because what'll happen over time, because especially if you're a good preacher, is you'll gather people who like to hear your ideas. And what we actually need to do is figure out, how do we proclaim the good news of the gospel, you know, that God is coming into the world to make the world right? And how do we proclaim that at the place of pain? And what most of us do after a while is we've stopped listening to our neighbors. We've stopped listening to the heartbeat, to the cry of their hearts. They can't, many of our neighbors can't even put it in Christian language. You know, they don't think in terms of, oh, I have been separated from God. They say stuff like, I have very little meaning or purpose. I have a difficult time having relationships. I feel alone without a sense of community. I'm trying to find a tribe to belong to, and so I end up in weird places, political groups or service groups. I just want to belong. If our preaching doesn't speak, the question I always want to ask preachers is, how does the good news that God has revealed to you in the scripture, how is it good news to someone out here? What does it mean for this to be good news to the genuine place of somebody's pain? And most of us spend much more of our time wanting to make it, instead of good news to someone out here, we want to make it news we all prefer to people in here. Like this was fun to hear. Good for us to do. We're all singing the same sheet.
Right. So in the old way of thinking, people might remember things that are true.
Yeah.
But we haven't actually met them in their pain.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
they might understand and have new insights, but not change.
Yep.
Not become more like Christ or become more faithful disciples as a result. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So in a Christendom world, the Christendom is not everybody's a Christian. Christendom means that the culture gives Christianity a home court advantage. So almost everybody grows up thinking Christian ideas, Christian thoughts, Christian notions. It's the reason why in almost every town in America, there's like a courthouse, a library, and the first church of whoever got there first,
right
in downtown. Right. And all the other first churches are all on Second Street.
Right.
Because the world's going to be organized by law, education, and religion, meaning Christian religion, even if we're not Christian.
Even the old town common.
Town common. Right. It's exactly that way, right? Exactly that way. So even in places where it's no longer Christian in the way we think, Christendom holds. So preaching then becomes reminding people of what they lost. Mm-hmm. It's Abraham Joshua Heschel said, all the Bible teaches can be summed up in one word, remember.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. Post-Christendom, where people are so disconnected from that, they need their lives reframed. So it goes from remembering to reframing. So reframing that this moment, what you are experiencing, is what we think of as what happens when people get disconnected from God and from their neighbor. Mm. The invitation here, the good news for you, is you do not have to live alone in that. Mm-hmm. You do not have to be alone in that.
Yeah.
You do not have to rely on the things of the world, money or power, or you actually have a different opportunity to live in a different way of being. We call that repentance. You may not have heard that phrase, but what we're really asking you to do is, as Dallas Willard puts it, think through the strategies of living in light of the reality that a God who loves you and knows you is reaching out to you. So in a post-Christian world, Christian proclamation is more about reframing people's lives than it is about trying to remind them of something they forgot.
It's been such a delight talking with you and learning from you and your work on adaptive leadership. Now, our listeners, those who are watching the YouTube version of this as well, they're going to be of all different races, ethnicities, generations. Some of them are just starting out in preaching. Some of them have been doing it for a long time. As you think about what word of challenge or even a word of wisdom or comfort, what do you think they need to hear?
I'm a practical theologian. That's where my degree is, right? And it, I think they need to hear that preaching is a practice, that we need to practice for a very particular thing. So I think preaching is like cooking. Your goal isn't to become a star chef. It is to feed your family and maybe to feed your neighbors and to feed them good, rich food that'll make them healthy. And David Chang, who's a famous restaurateur, calls the food his mother fed him ugly delicious. make your point of your sermons to be as delicious as possible, even if it's rough around their edges or not as articulate or as funny, but it just feeds people. And then over time, we can work on making it more and more beautiful. The goal isn't to be a rock star chef.
Right.
The goal is to be really, really, it's to be the person who wants to come eat at your house.
Yes, yes. Right?
You want your neighbors to come show up at your house. Yeah. Make your preaching like that.
I love that analogy too, because sometimes they like it and we don't.
Right, right.
Sometimes we like it and they don't. And then the work of cooking is improvisational too. You start with a recipe, but then you have to build up over time. And a family knows that you love them not because you just crush it every time. They know that you love them because you faithfully cook for them over time. And that's beautiful. That's a beautiful way to think about it.
Yeah, like people have come to our house to love my children. One's gluten-free. I'm Italian. So I'm like, if I love her, I've got to figure out what to do with gluten-free stuff.
That's right.
But my love is that I show up for her, not going, you know, take a pill and suffer through because my lasagna is really amazing.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. And she knows that you love her because of that. You're serving.
Think of it as if I was going to feed my neighborhood, what kind of food would I put out that is both delicious and makes them want to eat more? Think of that. I think preaching is that. It's a generous, hospitable act.
Well, let me just say how delighted I have been listening to you and learning from you, Dr. Todd Bolsinger. Thank you so much as well to all of you for participating in the KLC Preaching Podcast, whether that's on YouTube or Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you're listening or watching. We're just so grateful that you're participating in this podcast. Click like, subscribe, tell others about it. Thanks again so much for joining us, Dr. Bolsinger, and thanks for listening, everybody. Have a blessed day.